This is a companion podcast to my Fox Nation special, Riddle, The Search for James R. Hoffa. Be sure to go to foxnation.com to watch the whole show. And now, Riddle, the podcast.
I cannot engage directly or indirectly in management of a labor union.
Disappeared from the site here at the Marcus Red Fox restaurant.
Hi, I'm Eric Sean, and welcome to Riddle, the podcast. My in-depth conversations with those involved in our Fox Nation special, Riddle, the search for James R. Hoffa, and my Fox News reporting. Thanks for listening today. For the next 24 minutes, you'll hear from Melvin Goodconnect. Melvin is a former special agent in the Intelligence Division of the IRS. He was part of the prosecution team that put Frank Sheeran in federal prison, and believe it or not, he says Sheeran, despite being an admitted mafia hitman, was one of the most honorable people he ever met. He is also the author of the book, Working the Edge. But first, let me get you quickly up to speed. Jimmy Hoffa, he disappeared on July 30th, 1975, from the parking lot of the Marcus Red Fox restaurant in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. It was believed he was headed to a meeting with Detroit mob boss Anthony Tony Jack Jackalone and New Jersey Genovese captain and Teamster official Tony Pro Provenzano. Well, in 2001, Bufalino crime family member and Teamster official Frank Sheeran, an admitted mafia killer, he told me he shot Hoffa in a house in Detroit. I met him as part of his proposed biography, which became the book I Heard You Paint Houses. In 2004, we went to that house. We pulled up the tiles on the hardwood floor, and we actually found blood. The pattern fit Sheeran's story precisely. The greatest amount of the possible evidence was in front of the foyer closet door, where Sheeran says Hoffa hit his head on the floor. 7 drops went down the hallway to the kitchen, where Sheeran says Hoffa's body was dragged out by 2 accomplices and was cremated. The FBI did find blood. They said 1 drop was inconclusive in terms of a DNA match. Another one was to an unknown male. There was no match to Hoffa, which is why I am calling on the government to release all of the Hoffa FBI investigation files fully now. Let the Hoffa family and the American public know what's been secret for so long and that we have been denied knowing, and retest the blood evidence we found using the latest DNA technology. Here now, Melvin Goodconnect. Mel Goodconnect, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Let's go back to the beginning. How did you get involved in the case of Frank Sheeran? Because you were a special agent in the intelligence division of the Internal Revenue Service.
Yes, that's correct. In 1978, we joined the Inspector General's Office of the United States Department of Labor, Office of Organized Crime and Labor Racketeering. This unit was a special unit in the Inspector General's Act where a unit was created to investigate organized crime specifically. So I was approached by another agent to come along with him to investigate labor racketeering. I knew Jimmy Hoffa was gone approximately 2.5 years. And when I was offered the job, I didn't know that it was actually going to investigate the death of Jimmy Hoffa.
So the case you had, Frank Sheeran was a defendant. What was the case?
The case was a labor racketeering case with Taft-Hartley violations. And it was actually a RICO conspiracy we used to indict him.
And he was charged with labor racketeering, using a car and payoffs and bribery and this sort of thing?
That's pretty much it, Eric. The car, the big Lincoln, that's what brought Jimmy Hoffa, Frank Sheeran down. I started my investigation. and started looking into the relationship between a leasing company and Frank Sheeran. The leasing company happened to be owned by a close associate of Russell Bufalino. Russell Bufalino was the head of the crime family in northern Pennsylvania and is probably one of the best, well, unknown organized crime figures in the United States.
And this case, you had Frank Sheeran at the defense table. You testified. What was Frank Sheeran like?
Frank Sheeran, he was a pretty scary guy, I got to tell you. He also was an honorable man. I just couldn't believe. One of the things that happened was incredible. After I convicted him of RICO, Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organizations Act, sentencing him to 20 years, he comes at me almost like a linebacker and puts his hand out and says, "Good job, Mel, no hard feelings."
In the courtroom.
In the courtroom, right after the jury got out, after the judge left the stand, he came over to me before any marshals can get him, and he just put his hand out and said that to me. It was incredible. That had never happened in all my time in law enforcement. A defendant facing 20 years in jail comes over and shakes my hand and says, "Good job, no hard feelings."
He was the most honorable man you ever met, and that would be surprising considering he's an admitted mob killer who claims he killed Jimmy Hoffa, that he had this honor.
He did have this honor. It was crazy. But if you stepped across the line, then you're in trouble. An FBI agent was talking to Sheeran's daughter out in the outside the courtroom, and Sheeran sees this and tells the United States attorney how many murders does he have against him. And he says, "Two or three, Frank." You're like, "You don't know?" He said, "Well, we're going to add some more to it. Add one more if that man doesn't get away from my daughter." So he threatened to kill him right there and then.
And that sounds like Frank.
That's Frank. So a few days later, the FBI agent was going to his car and was assaulted by some unknown person or persons with a blanket. So what we call that, Eric, is the availability notice.
Mm-hmm.
That availability notice, you know, that could have been death to that FBI agent, is what it, and Sheeran sent the message that if you don't stop, then you're not untouchable. So that was the message, and the FBI agent came into the courtroom the next day and just started screaming and yelling at Frank. And then Frank just sat there and smiled at him.
Wow. You said he scared you. You. In your book, Working the Edge, you describe him as Frankenstein, but the gentle giant.
Yes, that's it was kind of funny. He was a bouncer at a dance hall, which was two blocks away from my house. I'm probably 10, 12, 13 years old. And we used to go up and listen to the music at the dance hall and watch the people going in. Well, Frank Sheeran was the bouncer. I couldn't believe that he was the same guy I was going to put away 30 years from then.
So 30 years before you cross paths at this place?
At this place, yeah. And he's chasing me away from this front of the dance hall because we're listening to music. And so he's shooing us away, and here comes this monster. And I was like, 10 years old, 10, 12 years old.
That's
amazing.
It was
an amazing experience.
That is.
Yeah.
Now, bring us to 1975. You believe Frank Sheeran killed Jimmy Hoffa.
Absolutely. No doubt in my mind.
Why is that?
The biggest thing is his ability to get close to the man. That in and of itself has to narrow it down to like one or two people. So he was there. He took Russell Bufalino in the car, the Black Lincoln, which was his downfall. My whole case was around that Black Lincoln and a couple other cars.
Let me just stop for a second, because the Black Lincoln is not the car that was at the Marcus Red Fox. You're referring to a car that was leased, and that was part of a conviction and a payoff. So that's a separate car than the car in which Sherwin said he picked Hoff up at the Marcus Red Fox.
Yes.
Page 113 of your book. Let me just read this. This is what you write. Who better to do the hit than Sharon, Bufalino's assassin? Sharon had the most to lose. He killed Hoffa with a double tap to the back of Hoffa's head. Sharon left the scene to Sally Bugs and the brothers Andretta. It was on the Irishman to do the job, on his friend, for a friend. If not, Sharon would have to go. I believe that Sally Bugs Bergoglio was there to ensure the job was done. If Sharon didn't shoot Hoffa, then Bergoglio would take them both out. Sharon was outmanned. As you know, some like Dan Maldia, Dan believes that Sharon was there, was an eyewitness to the murder, but he believes Sal Bergoglio shot him, not Sharon. How do you square, you know, these differences, and that you're so convinced and believe that Sharon was the one?
Well, I know Sharon. I investigated him for years. I really didn't know Sally Bugs, but because Sharon had shot and killed him on the streets of New York a few years before, I got involved in the investigation. But when that Black Lincoln the Black Lincoln is the car that Frank Sheeran drove Russell Bufalino to Detroit, Michigan. When I centered on that car, I went back to find out who leased the car, where that car came from, and ultimately the car was a payoff from a company that was doing business with the union. So I expanded my investigation from there, and what happened was we formed a RICO. When I asked for the records of Teamsters 326, Big Frank was sitting in the chair and just staring at me. He never would say anything. It was just like a Hulk. The attorney was doing all the talking. He's just staring at me, which, like, you know, that was a little unsettling. Even when I presented him with the federal grand jury subpoenas, he wouldn't even take them. He would just stare at me, and the attorney would grab him.
That must have been unsettling.
Yeah, it was, especially after we were threatened by one of his goons out in the hallway, asking us what size shoes we're wearing, so he could measure them for cement boots. You know, that could have went both ways, but I kind of took offense because I told him I was going to put my shoe up his ass if he wants to take the measurements later. And then Frank Sheeran hits the door, comes out of his meeting, and they're all screaming, going crazy. I call it the Irish, the Italian overtalk, when you got eight people talking at the same time and nobody's listening. You got the attorney, you got Sheeran, you got the mutant that threatened me. You got me, you got my other agent. We're all standing there screaming at one another.
What a scene.
Big show.
I do want to point out, Sharon, for those who don't know, claims that he shot Sally Bugs Bergoglio in 1978, Mulberry Street, Little Italy. It is still an open case, hasn't been solved. Reports say there were at least two witnesses say there were two gunmen. So that still is an open case.
I think that was John Francis.
Yes, John the Redhead Francis, who was a friend of Sharon. So that it could be Francis and Sharon,
others. He was on the books and records of the Teams of 326. John Francis. He was getting money out of the union.
Yeah, the blood pattern that we found in the house. When you found out about that, even though there's no DNA match to the blood that was found, what did that do to you and your thinking about Frank Sharon's culpability?
That just shut the book, Eric. I knew it all along. I knew it 2 months after I started investigating Frank. I knew he was the one that killed Jimmy Hoffa, based on my experience as an investigator. And I tell you what, he was, it was quite something.
Does the lack of a DNA match to Hoffa's blood disprove that to you?
No, it doesn't.
Why
not? Absolutely not. I mean, look, you got a guy that's that kills his best friend. He goes to jail for almost life. And this is the honor thing. He could have said any time he wanted to get out of jail was what happened, and he never did it. That was part of that honor thing I was talking about before.
And you eventually sent him back to prison, what, because he was meeting with John Staffa, who at the time was the alleged head of the Philadelphia crime family. Staffa now in prison the rest of his life.
That's correct. I got a guy by the name, an informant I developed. I called him the Big Tuna. Well, the Big Tuna happened to be driving Frank Sheeran around. He was his driver for a while. Frank really didn't have very good luck with drivers. His first driver was Charlie Allen, the hitman, and he turned on him and wired him up. Now, 14 years later, I'm still investigating. He comes, Big Tuna comes in, and we start wiring him up, and he's driving Frank around. So we got the same thing 14 years later, and he was meeting with John Staffa. That was about the time that Russell Bufalino was starting to fade out. And
it was a violation of his parole to meet with Staffa?
Yes. No contacts with known criminals, no going out of the state. So the FBI came over, and we started a joint investigation and surveilled him going out of the state, surveilled him with major mob figures, and then we put him back in prison. Still, he wouldn't talk.
At one point, Charlie Allen directly was wired and said, "Did you kill Jimmy Hoffa?"
Yes. And that was it. That was they must have been at the end of the FBI must have been at the end of their agreement. You only get like 30 days to have a wire. So they must have been getting down to the end of their time limit. So that was it. That popped the question. That's when Sheeran knew right away. Jeez, he knew he was wired then. And I think it was in Cherry Hill, and then he passed off a gun and took off to Philadelphia.
Do you think, in talking about the FBI, one thing we're calling for in Riddle, our Fox Nation show, and a reporting on Fox News Channel, foxnews.com, we want the government to release the FBI files unredacted. Release the FBI 302s, release the information from the informants, release what Ralph Picardo said, so that the American public can finally learn everything that the FBI knows. The Hoffa family wants this. They support the public release of all this material. As an investigator for years, Mal, do you believe it's time to get it all out there?
Absolutely. You know, we were fighting with the FBI the entire time. We were almost the entire time on the strike force. We had two simultaneous grand juries going on against Frank Sheeran coming out of the same strike force offices. It was crazy. It was a crazy period. And we were always fighting with them.
And why
still fighting?
And why, you know, they directed us to file another Freedom of Information Act request. But, you know, when they've released this to the Detroit Free Press, and Barbara Kranzer, Hoffa's daughter, was largely unsuccessful in her first couple of attempts. It's all redacted. I mean, tons of material with things that are crossed out and you can't read it, and they're obviously keeping it secret and hiding something. Legitimate reasons, maybe for sources and methods and informants, but many of them, or most, are gone now. What do you think this material would show if indeed we are able to get our hands on it?
There could be, I'm just speculating, it could be additional crimes and associations that some people don't want to be aired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to start getting back into the John F. Kennedy assassination, which I believe was done by organized crime. The same thing happened there. So why not get all this information out, unredacted, to the public? This is a crime of the century and a mystery of the century, and it has to be resolved.
And in terms of the DNA testing of the floor, it's 15 years later now since when we first went there. And there's obviously advances in DNA testing. Do you think the FBI, would you call on the FBI to retest the floorboards that were taken up out of the house that we found, to retest the blood evidence and the suspected blood evidence that we found in the house?
Absolutely. Well, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't want to do that. I mean, they were investigating, 1975, 78, along with me, to 1998 when I retired. I was still investigating it. So why not?
And one person who was in the file, certainly, Ralph Picardo. It's been said that the Andretta brothers, or Steve Andretta, came to visit him, and that Picardo supposedly spilled the beans about what happened. There are two suspects, two major suspects still alive. Thomas Andretta, in his 80s, lives in Las Vegas. He took the Fifth in 1975. We have reached out to him. He has not responded to our request for comment or an interview. Chucky O'Brien, who told the AP in 2006 he didn't have anything to do with it or didn't know, he took the Fifth in 1975. We've reached out to him, and sources close to Chucky say that he does not want to talk about it. Tell me about Ralph Picardo and your experience with him, because he was an inmate at Trenton State when this meeting allegedly happened.
Yes. He was an inmate, and according to what Ralph told me, the attorney and the Andrettas came to pretty much extort him out of his businesses. So they wanted him to write off all the businesses back to the mob. So he kind of did that, and he started getting feelings. This is at the time that the attorney left the room, and then the Andretta told him that, not in so many words, probably, that they did a job in Detroit, And then Frank, Ralphie took that ball and ran with it.
Do you think he was telling the truth, or he embellished, or was he someone that could actually rely on?
Ralphie is a liar. He was a crazy, crazy guy. But look, even liars tell the truth. Little Ralphie was accused of pumping five rounds into his one of his associates. And he was a crazy guy. He would just he would be calm one minute, next minute he's off the wall. I don't know what else. When I first picked him up, I didn't know who he was. So here we are, I'm guarding this guy, don't know who he is. And he says, my name's Ralph Picardo. I said, no. Because I knew the name from the Hoffex memos. And then he says, oh, there's a $50,000 contract out on me, and what are you going to do about it? I said, oh, man. It seems like it always comes down to me. So what I had to do in my own defense was give him my backup weapon, a .38 caliber Smith & Wesson Special that I had on my ankle. So I gave it to him, and we're guarding each other for six months to a year.
Well, you said he was crazy and also a liar, but as you said, sometimes they tell the truth.
Yes.
Did he? Yeah, did he ever say anything to you about Frank Sherrin or about Jimmy Hoffa?
Yeah. He said that they actually, the guys killed Jimmy Hoffa. So he never mentioned Frank to me. in relationship to the to his side of that thing. I don't know if he even knew that Frank was in, you know, part of it.
But he did say, he did mention the suspects that they killed Jimmy Hoffa.
Yes, that they went to Detroit, they did it, they put him in a 55-gallon drum and then shipped him back to the East Coast. Now, Ralphie tells me, I said, well, where the hell is he now? He said, well, he's in the dog food. So what do you mean? He says, they put him in a 55-gallon drum, shipped him to Northeast Pennsylvania, which is Russell Bufalino's territory, and then they shredded him into dog food.
Oh, man. It is amazing. Do you think, finally, Mel, do you think, you know, what would take this for it to be completely solved? You know, you've got Frank Sherman's story. You have his confession that you believe. You've got the corroboration, seemingly, of the blood evidence and pattern that we found on the floor of the house. And we're calling for the release of all the FBI files, unredacted. Get it out there. That's our call. What Great. Would you like to see happen? And do you think that will finally bring closure to the case?
I think it will. I think the blood evidence and the new technology out there today can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Frank killed Jimmy Hoffa.
Mel Goodconnect, author of Working the Edge, all about his life as a special agent in the Intelligence Division of the IRS in Philadelphia. Born and raised and knew Frank Sherman since you were 10 years old and ended up prosecuting him, being on the team of prosecuting him. Mel, my great thanks and thank you for your involvement, for your service to our nation and to the insights that you bring to us about Jimmy Hoffa and Frank Sherman.
Thank you very much for having me, Eric.
Thanks for listening today. Check out all the other Riddle podcasts. You can also follow me on Twitter and Facebook. And just Google my name, put Frank Sherman next to it or Jimmy Hoffa, and you can see the other articles we've written, and you can keep up with my reporting on Fox News. I'm Eric Schon. Thanks again for Riddle, the podcast.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.